time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this.
The American people, I think, is good people. They have not to charge with the guilty of all the lies.
I would suck his dick.
That's high praise.
Welcome back to the Cold War episode 174, Barry yeah. Bear.
Yeah, I'm really...
I'm a bear really, and I'm a Barry. I'm a Barry Bear.
I'm very happy to be here tonight with you.
At the end of our last episode, Stalin and Molotov wrote the Yugoslav Communist Party a letter saying, listen, honestly,
yeah,
we're appalled at your lack of democracy and you're not even really communists, so there.
Yeah. What are you doing? Yeah. And obviously, Tito was not going to take that very well, so it's time for Tito to make a move. So he's going to call a plenary session of the Central Committee because this kind of thing has got to be discussed. And to show you how important this committee has not been pulled together since 1940 when he took a lead of the party. So this is a big deal. This requires a Yugoslav-wide response because Stalin is now showing his cards.
So they have this meeting of the Central Committee. Harsh words were said openly about Stalin.
Yes.
Zhuzhevich, the guy who's basically, the only pro-Stalin guy left.
Sorry.
Well, one of two, really.
Right.
Yeah. He begged them in the meeting not to criticize Stalin, accused them of being Trotskyists.
Because I have to report it.
Tito, in return, accused him of treason.
Oh, shit.
And he was arrested not long after. Stalin complained about his arrest, along with another guy who was he'd already been kicked out of the Central Committee, but another pro-Stalinist guy. Stalin complained, told Tito to release them,
yeah.
Accused Tito of planning on murdering them, which Stalin no doubt would have done.
Yeah.
And now he's lost his spy in Tito's inner circle. So he's furious. He also demanded that a Soviet representative attend Zhuzhevich's trial, and Tito refused everything.
Damn.
No, I'm not letting him go. No, you can't have anyone at the trial. Just shut up, man. Just shut up. You're a clown, man.
And Stalin is not finished demanding. He's like, I demand that the Yugoslavs attend the coming Cominform meeting that's coming, like you said, the Communist Information Bureau in Bucharest. So there's going to be this big meeting. If Stalin can't browbeat Tito individually through letters, maybe in a very big conference when he can get a bunch of people on his side, because someone's got to take Tito down. This is getting out of hand for Stalin.
So it was then that the Cominform,
mm-hmm.
the meeting of the International Communist Leadership, meeting in Bucharest,
right.
the capital and largest city of Romania, shocked and surprised the world by announcing the expulsion of Yugoslavia's Communist Party the Cominform for crimes ranging from grandeeism...
Guilty.
To wanting the restoration of capital.
When's the last time
grandeeism?
When's the last time you grandeed?
Oh man, yeah, I'd grandee every time we do a podcast.
And you got to do it next week, jumping out of a perfectly good plane. So badass.
Got my pants off, grandeeing all over the place. Now, do you know who the grandees were, Ray?
The grandees.
Do you know what grandeism means? Who the grandees were?
No, tell me.
They were members of the higher nobility in sort of medieval Spain.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Clerical and secular. They were, it was sort of a nobility title. not one of the Hidalgos or the Caballeros, another rank of nobility. Usually had sort of high state positions, had a lot of privileges, didn't have to pay tax, had the right to defend their liberty to the extent that they could declare war on the king and transfer their allegiance to another lord. They ended up becoming sort of court nobles in the 15th century, got abolished in 1931 when the monarchy was abolished. But that's basically what he's accusing them of is sort of being just a bunch of, rich elites running right. the country, I guess.
Yeah.
Said that they wanted to restore capitalism. Now, obviously, this announcement shocked loyal communists in Yugoslavia, as well as people around the world who thought Yugoslavia was exciting. Here we have another communist country, and all of a sudden they've been kicked out of the communist party, leadership right. party.
And Stalin's not finished turning the screws, but I just wanted to add on that, one, Tito decided not to send anyone to the common forum. So, again, that was him standing up to Stalin. And Jilosh was asking himself and others, like, is this going to lead to war? Are the Soviets going to attack us? Because obviously that would be the end of everything. Who in the hell wants to take on the Red Army after they showed what they can do? So, but Jilosh and others think Stalin's going to be pissed, but he's not going to physically attack us. He doesn't have to. He just kicked you out, and now he's going to economically isolate you. Like you said, economics is just another means of war. That's what Stalin is about to do.
Yeah.
Oh, and did you see the date? Did you see the date that the announcement came that they were kicked out? It was another anniversary.
I did, yeah. It was another anniversary, yeah.
Say Vitus Day.
He's picking his... Yeah, I mean, really? Are they holding off? Going, no, we can't do it until St. Vitus Day. We've got to hold off.
Now, yeah.
Come on, really? No, it's just going to be funny. It's going to be funny. Just do it. Hold off. I don't know. Now, there were lots of loyal commonformists, as they were known, in Yugoslavia. About 10,000 out of about 500,000 members of the Yugoslav Communist Party membership.
Right.
Commonformists, as they're called. The people just were loyal to the Soviet model of communism, and the majority of these in Yugoslavia were apparently Serbs, most of them coming from Montenegro,
right.
Which was an ancient ally of the Tsar and Stalin. And so in Yugoslavia, it turned into a kind of purge, where people were accusing their enemies and sometimes their husbands of being secret commonformists.
Oh, shit.
Much like the Red Scare in the USA at the time. There was a Red Scare in Yugoslavia, but it's one group of communists accusing another group of being communists.
Not the right type, not the right loyal communist. But how about this? They were.
Are you now?
Right.
Or have you ever been a communist? Well, yeah, you're a communist, I'm a communist. No, yeah, but you know, are you the wrong kind of communist?
I don't think so. Are you?
Are you a member of the Judean People's Front? Or are you in the People's Front of Judea? This is what we need to know. Yeah.
No, but this is...
Fucking splitters.
This is a very interesting episode in history because you have communists... Yeah, I get that, but you have communists who are choosing their leader... their Tito versus the leader of all communists, supposedly Stalin. So it's nationalism with a hint of communism, or maybe that's the other way around, versus Stalinism. So I find it interesting that some people are going, nope, Tito's my guy. I'm sticking with him. So this could lead to civil war.
Yeah. But it never became a witch hunt. Like the one that happened in the Soviet Union in the 30s, trying to get rid of the Trotskyists.
Or McCarthyism later on.
Yeah, well, McCarthyism was never as bad. It was bad in its own way.
Right,
but it's not like they were putting tens of thousands of people in jail, just ruining their lives and ruining their careers.
For little things. Yeah.
It never really became that bad in Yugoslavia. There were a lot of people arrested in Yugoslavia who were conformists. They were actually conformists, not people just accused of it by others because they wanted to get rid of them. There are stories of wives wanting to get rid of their husbands and telling the authorities they're actually secret conformists.
Right.
Try and get rid of them.
Damn.
And Tito was pretty ruthless to people who he thought were actual traitors to the country. But as we'll see over the course of the next couple of episodes, he's not a Stalin. Tito.
Right.
He's not inherently paranoid and suspicious by nature. Tended to give people the benefit of the doubt rather than Stalin's approach, which seems to be, well, if there's a hint that they might not be loyal, let's just get rid of them to save time.
Yeah, but make it painful.
Tito was just, Tito would give people the benefit of the doubt. On one, there's one great story. I think it's in maybe Richard West's book. He tells the story of how Rankovic and Zhias interrogated a Montenegrin Air Force pilot who was suspected of planning an escape to Albania. The man cried and proclaimed his loyalty. Comrades, give me a bomber and I'll show Sofia and Budapest in Tirana, who is a revisionist, who is a traitor. Let me serve my country and my party. Let me die honorably as a soldier and a revolutionary. Now, Zhias wasn't as ready to accept his professions of innocence as Rankovic was, particularly because he was a Montenegrin, and the Montenegrins, as I said before, a lot of them were conformists. And according to Zhias, Montenegrins are prone to pathetics and hysteria.
Right.
Keep that in mind if you ever meet anyone from Montenegro.
Right.
But the man had been brave in the war, so they let him free. And when Tito was told this story a few days later, he was apparently delighted.
Aww.
Because he said it demonstrated the Yugoslav communist virtues of toleration and leniency. He said, we must not be sectarian. We mustn't allow petty suspicions to lead us, like the Russians, into destroying our comrades.
Right.
We have to give our comrades a chance to correct their mistaken views. Take the pilot now. He's ready to fly to his death tomorrow if need be, and yet we play the narrow sectarian.
How does that story end with the pilot?
Well, a few days later, he did try to escape to Albania using hand grenades and an automatic rifle against the frontier guards, and he was shot and killed. But up until that point, it was a beautiful story. You had to go and ruin it with the ending.
It's kind of my thing. It's what I do's. I'm sorry.
It's like at the end of Star Wars, you know, Luke and Han and Chewie and 3PO and R2 are all up on the platform.
Right, getting awards.
Leia looking hot, hot as fuck. Leia's up there just smoking. 19-year-old. 19-year-old Carrie Fisher smoking hot. She's up there, just these fuck me eyes, mostly for Chewbacca.
Right.
But
I like him big, I like him
hairy.
She's
pretending it's for Han and Luke, but she loved a bear. she, you know what she called him?
No. I'm a bear and I'm a Barry. I'm a Barry Bear.
She called him Barry Bear. She loved it. But it's like, you know, that, your version of it is that happens and the music builds up. Da da dun. Dun da da dun dun da 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 da. And then somebody comes in and just kills them all. That's how you would have made Star Wars.
He's got a grenade. Yeah, I would just throw a grenade in there.
Just have to
kill them all.
Fucking ruining what was a beautiful story.
I'm sorry. I feel bad now. I'm sorry. Okay. But it shows.
You feel bad. How do you think Tito felt?
He's like, egg on my face. Yeah, but
it's like Julius Caesar saying, listen, no. Civil war's done. Forgive everyone.
Right.
It's okay. Look, we're all friends again now.
I don't need bodyguards.
And then they stab him to death a minute later. He's like, exactly. Oh, fuck. You guys. You're I'm trying to be Jesus here.
Embarrassing me, right? Stab him in
I'm
the
pre-Jesus.
Groin.
I'm pre-Jesusing Jesus.
Yeah.
And I'm pre-Jesus Caesar. Pre-Jesus Caesar.
And, they were both killed. So, lesson learned. Don't do it. Where were we?
What happened to Zhuzhevich?
Yeah, so as far as Zhuzhevich goes, the Minister of Finance, obviously one of the most important Cominformists, he remained in prison without a trial until 1950. That is when Gyulash and Renkovich decided they were going to try to win him back. Maybe he's had some time to think about it, and now it's trying, like taking a page from Tito, let's see if we can turn this guy back to the good side. And so they're going to give it a go.
Keep going.
All right. So first thing they do is they beat him. No. So the first thing they do is they show him a transcript from a trial that's going on in Eastern Europe where communists are being accused of plotting with Tito to bring back capitalism. Now, because I'm sure the transcript was completely ridiculous because the trial itself was ridiculous, I think he reads this and he goes, you know what? Maybe I got it wrong. They also brought him some Borba newspapers that he's been missing since he's been in jail. He reads over this. He sees that everything Tito was trying to do, and he realizes, you know what? I misjudged Tito. So there, he promises to write a retraction in Borba, the newspaper. They let him out of prison. They eventually let him back into the party. And when he dies, he is buried with full military honors in 1976. That's Tito. That's Titoism. I'd rather screw up a little bit and take a chance and try to save people for the cause, for the country, for the party, whereas Stalin will just line you up against the wall 9 out of 10 times and have you shot in the face.
So Tito was lenient to Zhuzhevich, mm-hmm. And yet he sent thousands of Cominformists to slave camps,
right,
on an island called Goli Otok,
yeah,
naked island or barren island,
sex island
in Croatia.
Right.
It's in the...
Sorry.
No, that's...
oh, that's something else.
What's
Sorry.
Sex
that's
islands?
Our movie. Gotcha.
Fuck. That was... shit, I'm trying to jump streams.
Sorry.
Here.
I've heard of fantasy.
Who followed Augustus? Like Tiberius. Tiberius's island.
Oh, Capri.
Was,
Capri, no.
What was his island?
Oh,
Capri.
Oh, yeah.
Capri.
Sex island. Mm. But now,
that's sex
well, like you said earlier, these people, this isn't going to be what Stalin would do. These people are going to be, as far as we can tell, truly found to be, you know, choosing Stalin over Tito. So when they go to jail, they are at least guilty of the crime that Tito thinks they're guilty of. So does that make it any better? I don't know. But he has to remove these people who are not loyal to him.
Or well, not loyal to the country,
Good
I
point.
Guess. I
Good
mean,
point.
You know, again, let's keep in mind that this is a country that's been, well, not just devastated by World War II, but has a long history of internecine warfare,
yeah.
Of
oh, yeah.
race against race, religion against religion. You know, he's trying to unify the country for the first time,
yes,
really,
yes,
around the common good of the people. You can't have 10,000-12,000 people that are effectively trying to sell you out to a foreign power, which is essentially what the Cominformists are doing. They're all active spies. You know, again, we can compare it to Stalin's purges, which was more about paranoia. We can compare it to the Red Scare in the US at exactly the same time
mm-hmm.
this is going on, but the US isn't sending tens of thousands of suspected communists to jail.
Right.
That is the big difference. They're just ruining their right. lives, but, as we talked about before.
And Tito's got...
making sure they can't get
exactly,
work.
And that's your way of getting retribution, so they can't have power or money to hurt you. And these people that are being sent to Sex Island, they're quarrying for marble. I mean, it's hard physical work. There's physical abuse. There's verbal abuse. So again, this side of Tito has to be acknowledged. I don't know how involved he was with setting up the standards or the day-to-day running, but the point is this did happen under his watch, and so it has to be acknowledged.
Yeah, the prisoners weren't allowed any visitors. Relatives weren't even told where they were, and kids were just told daddy's gone away on a business trip, yeah. which is, I think, actually the title of a movie that was made about this prisoner island decades later.
Yeah.
And all of the people that were released from Naked Island were sworn not to talk about it under pain of returning there.
Damn.
So, yeah, that's pretty repressive.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to take, you know, accuse people of being traitors and putting them in a prison, but then saying they're not allowed to talk about prison, and if you do, you'll go back to prison. But, you know, honestly, the Australian government right now, has laws in place where if an Australian goes to one of the concentration camps that we run on Pacific Islands, like Nauru, where we have or had attempted asylum seekers, people coming here via boat, government calls them illegal immigrants, they're actually very legal asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. We just put them on a concentration camp, not on our soil, because if they're on our soil, they get certain legal rights. Right. We put them on a fucking foreign nation's island. The Australian government has a law in place that if an Australian goes to one of those islands, mm-hmm. a doctor or some or a journalist, and comes back, they're not allowed to talk about it. You go to jail if you talk about what you saw on the island.
Fascism. God damn. If you can't handle people talking about it, maybe that's a sign you shouldn't be doing it. But what do I know?
Yeah.
The closest I can come to that is members of Congress. You probably remember this from last year when they were trying to visit those Latino kids who were separated from their parents and put into, for lack of better words, cages. Members of Congress would go to those facilities and they weren't allowed in. It's, you know, I mean, so pretty fucking sick stuff that governments still do today, but we're getting sidetracked.
Now, Tito set up the Naked Island camp through Rankovich. And apparently, though, Rankovich didn't know or didn't want to know exactly what went on there.
Yeah.
Plausible deniability. And according to Gias, Tito, more than once in 1948, would be heard to say, off to jail with him, off to the camp. What else can he expect if he works against his own party?
Yeah,
and the truth about what went on at Naked Island didn't even become known to senior communists until apparently 1953, when partisan general called Kenny Kramer, Dobrika Kozic, visited there and came back and spilled the beans on what was going on there.
Yeah.
And conditions were then improved. But even the very existence of the camp didn't become generally known in Yugoslavia until the 1960s, when Rankovic was sort of on the outs with the party, and he kind of copped the blame for it, I think. It wasn't an extermination camp like Jasenovac or Auschwitz, but, you know, major blot on Tito's record, which, as we'll see, apart from this, he does a pretty good job. We're gonna, like, a fascinating thing about communism under Tito is it's not what you think of as communism. It's not Soviet style communism. Very different approach to communism. But this was, you know, look, as I said, one thing to grab people accused of treason or found guilty of treason and throw them in a jail, particularly immediately post a devastating war that has devastated your country. I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to rebuild. You're trying to prevent another civil war. You've already surrounded by enemies already. He's got the British and the Americans and now the Russians surrounded by enemies and the Italians and the Germans and the whole deal. You can't afford to have enemies inside your own state in that particular period when you're also already devastated, trying to rebuild, but that doesn't mean you need to be cunts about it. I mean, you can put people in prison and, you know, make it, you know, moral and ethical.
Right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I thought I read somewhere that if people were there for a certain amount of time...
You're wrong.
Thank you. And they admitted their mistakes or whatever, or if they were willing to go through some kind of political re-education, that it was possible for them to leave the island. I don't think some of them were there for the rest of their natural lives. I thought I read something to that
effect. Oh, you know, right. Yeah, apparently the whole point of it was like a, you know, what the classically call a communist re-education camp. They were there to confess and recant their views. Although, you know, honestly, when you've got people doing backbreaking labor and they, it's a bit like people confessing under torture.
I was wrong.
It's kind of meaningless.
True.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it's a bit like apparently the camp that the Chinese are running for the Muslims up in the north.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call it? People are up in arms in the west over it. The fucking, I got a mental blank. But a re-education camp was a classic communist way of trying to get people on the program.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there are ways of doing that even. You know, I don't have a problem with arresting people that are... internal dissidents, let's say, in particular circumstances. And again, I'm talking about a country devastated by war, civil war, as well as international war, and you're trying to rebuild. You have to take measures in those instances that you wouldn't necessarily take in a stable, democratic, prosperous country.
Right.
You know, there are certain measures that I think are probably justifiable during those sorts of periods, as certain things are justifiable during a war, which wouldn't be justifiable during normal times, during peace times.
Right.
But there's a way of doing that, and that is more humane, more ethical, more moral than backbreaking labor. But anyway, moving on, the period after the break with Russia must have been terrifying for Yugoslav communists. And pretty grim for the rest of the population, including the peasants. I mean, Tito was being accused by Stalin the God,
right,
of revisionism and wanting to reintroduce capitalism. Just think, you've gone through a war to get rid of capitalism and introduce communism into your country. All of a sudden, the God of communism is saying that the leader of your communist party is actually a secret capitalist and wants to reintroduce capital. I mean, that's got to be nerve-wracking.
Stings.
So Tito resolved to outdo Stalin at Stalinism at first.
Yeah, he was going to be more Catholic than the Pope. So his five-year plan, which he got from Stalin, was actually pushed forward. There were other people who did not want it to go that fast. There were the how do you say his name? Hebrang. I'm not sure how to say his name. And Juzhevich, who were like working with the Soviets, trying to bring them in, and because obviously Stalin wants to have some influence over this, but Tito just wants to go pell-mell as fast as he possibly can. Not only does he want to go fast on this five-year program, but he wants to hit wide of a front as possible. He wants to be able to change everything, and we're going to go into this in a minute. But the point is, he's going really fast. He's trying to outdo Stalin, but it's upsetting some of the more conservative members of the Communist Party, because he's just become this whirlwind. But I think he's trying to prove, look, I am a good guy. I do believe in Stalinism. To a degree, I just got to do it my way, and I'm going to emulate him, and I'm just trying to show you what I'm capable of. But it's rubbing some people the wrong way.
He said that there would, in February 1949, he said there would be greater boldness and a faster pace in setting up collective farms. Now, again, I want to point out, I think it's important to recognize that this whole thing about collectivization of farming isn't being done just for the fuck of it.
Right.
This isn't just communist fuckery. Like, you know, this is what we do.
Standard
we collectivize shit.
Yeah.
There's a purpose and a reason for collectivization here, as there was in the Soviet Union in the early days and even in this stage. The country was fucked economically, Yugoslavia.
Yes.
After the war. It was fucked before the war. Had it been fucked forever, didn't have a lot of economic progress.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the war, which was obviously devastating. So they can't grow enough crops in the way that they were doing it. Individual peasants
right.
doing whatever the fuck they want on the land.
Wasn't working.
No industrial level of farming, yeah. agriculture. Yeah. They just wouldn't be able to grow enough food. They're staring down famines.
Yeah.
So the idea is we need to rapidly modernize, industrialize. We need heavy farming equipment. We need modern farming practices. We need, you know, this needs to be managed as a production line, mm-hmm. Ford Motor Company approach to
right.
agriculture. Otherwise, we're going to starve to death.
Yeah.
We need to rapidly increase our ability to produce food or we're going to fucking starve.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, he's now facing an economic embargo from the Soviet Union. So
fuck.
He's fucked.
Yeah.
Economically even more fucked than he was fucked before. Yeah. He's like double level fucked. Fucked, yeah. fucked double. Fucked squared.
He's on a spit.
He's fucked squared. Squared fucked.
And this is February of 49. He's on a spit. One end, the other end is coming from all different ends. I mean, but he's still trying. He's still doing what he needs to do.
Yeah. Now, as you said, there were some, you know, people in the party that thought they shouldn't move too fast. There were also, obviously, peasants who didn't right. want to do it at all
yes.
or didn't want to move fast. There was some violent resistance to collectivization, particularly in places like northwest Bosnia around the Muslim region of Biac, where Tito had his headquarters back in 43.
Right.
And it failed, and we'll get into the where's and the why fors of it later. Like collectivization in the Soviet Union, it failed here as well. And for look, a whole bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
As I think I've explained before, in the late 40s, no computers, you know, the ability to centrally manage operations like this over mm-hmm. a relatively large
communications part of yeah.
country.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult. You know, central management of an economy or of production like this, for A, when people have never done it before, so there's no roadmap here of how to do it.
Right.
You're making it up as you go along. B, they're working with an uneducated, largely illiterate group mm-hmm. of people, the peasants.
Suspicious.
Who are skeptical, yeah. cynical, right. suspicious. A country that's been racked by thousands of years of fucking religious and civil divide and wars, and they don't trust each other. They're trying to, you know, figure out how to rapidly upgrade and implement all this kind of stuff. It's very fucking hard.
Yeah. And the experts
so
are
anyway,
gone.
But then
the Soviet experts.
We say experts.
Relatively speaking.
The Soviets fucked this yeah. up as well.
but they know more to now a large because extent. They fucked up in the 30s and 40s. But yeah, but they're gone.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah.
They had some experience that they could have shared about maybe what didn't work, right. but they're gone. And the economic embargo and the sanctions from the Soviet made life even harsher. But generally speaking, the people didn't revolt,
right.
generally. I mean, this is what the economic embargo was for. It's like when America puts an economic embargo on Cuba or North Korea or Iran or any other, Venezuela, it's there to break the will of the people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work. Didn't work in any of those countries.
No.
They've had one against Cuba for 70 years. Still hasn't worked.
Any day now.
Castro's are all gone right. from power. Still hasn't worked. Yeah, any day now. It's just like Trump getting rid of coronavirus. No. Any day now.
It'll disappear.
The magic will kick in. Just keep believing in Jesus. More prayers is what it needs. Oh, just more prayers.
Do I need to hold up another Bible? Because I will. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. The communists remain loyal to Tito, apart from the Cominformists,
right.
and the anti-communists in Yugoslavia liked the Russians even less than they liked Tito. So the people in general stayed loyal to Tito and the communist government.
Yeah.
In 1953, there were some reactionaries in Belgrade who said they believed that the quarrel with the Soviet Union was just a pretense to deceive the West for some reason. Not exactly sure how that works. Maybe, you know, the West will come in and think that, you know, it's Tito's their friend, but really he's a double agent.
Here's some money, here's some weapons.
But yeah. Stalin knew better. This wasn't double agent business. This was all out war against Stalin and Tito.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned a couple of times, we don't have to go into it now, but we mentioned a couple of times where Stalin may have sent someone in to kill Tito. The only thing that I know is that I think after the wall came down, after the Soviet Union collapsed, there were some records to show that some Soviet agents did try to get into Yugoslavia through Italy. But going back to what you were saying, in June of 1948, the Cominform printers are working overtime. They've got Tito as a Trotskyist. He's an American spy. They are just doing everything they can to ruin his name. But ironically, and you touched on this a second ago, but ironically, when Stalin turns against Tito and he shuts the country and he isolates it in a not superficial, but in a very temporary way, it brings all these disparate groups in Yugoslavia together because they have a common enemy. They're trying to survive against this economic blockade. It's not going to solve all their problems, but for a while, they're actually thinking about outside people causing trouble versus just trying to kill each other. So Tito had that little bit of a good moment going for him. But again, you're right. If they don't do something about the food situation in a very short time, there's going to be massive graves all over the place. And that is what Tito was focused on.
Now, not just the propaganda campaign. There are actually trials of suspected Titoists across other communist countries in Eastern Europe. They were put on trial for being secret Titoists. Several high-ranking Eastern European communists in places like Hungary, Albania, Poland, and Bulgaria, who defended Tito or said, hey, at least we should just hear him out, hear what his ideas are, were put on trial in their own countries and were jailed or even executed for being Titoists. So the new Trotsky, Tito is the new Trotsky.
Yes.
He's breaking away from Stalin's approved model. Now, as for the assassination attempts against Tito, I remember we talked about this long time ago. Long time ago. I remember, I think when Stalin died, there was a letter from Tito found in his desk, or maybe it was just found in the records after the fall of communism over there. But basically, Tito, I remember vaguely, he said, he wrote a letter to Stalin saying, thanks for sending those people to try and kill me. We caught them all. Lovely folks. If you send any more, I'll send somebody to kill you and I won't have to send a second. So, and then as I recall, Stalin died several months later. But
had a heart attack.
Some of the documents that came to light after Gorbachev was that Stalin sent agents from SMERSH, the anti-spy organization famous from James Bond novels and movies, to kill Tito. People may not know this, but SMERSH was a real organization, and it was an umbrella organization for three different counterintelligence agencies in the Red Army, formed in 1942, really as a result of Operation Barbarossa. Their official purpose was to subvert the attempts of the Nazis to infiltrate the Red Army on the Eastern Front. The name SMERSH was coined by Stalin himself. It's what do you call it when you stick portmanteau, when you join several words together? It was take SMERSHPYONIM, death to spies. What it means. SMERSHPYONIM, death to spies. Stalin, marketing genius, got Barry and Stan in, and they came up with SMERSH.
SMERSH it together.
The organization, SMERSH, officially was around until May 1946, when it was transferred back to the Ministry of State Security, the MGB. Now, it was run for its entire existence by the head of the State Security, the Minister of State Security, Viktor Abakumov.
Right.
Now, Abakumov, interesting character, after the death of Stalin, great movie, Abakumov was tried for fabricating the Leningrad affair, was sentenced to death and executed in 1954. Leningrad affair we've never talked about. We're not quite up to that yet, but basically a series of criminal cases in the late 40s and early 50s in Russia, fabricated by Stalin and Beria and Abakumov to take out prominent members of the Communist Party in Leningrad.
Damn.
As I understand it, just because they were a little bit too popular.
Right.
After the defense of Leningrad during the war, they were all heroes locally. And, like, the numbers are crazy. They were accused of treason, intention of creating an anti-Soviet organization in Leningrad. Over 200 senior officials in Leningrad were sentenced to 10 to 25 years in prison. Their families were stripped of rights to live and work in any major city, and so they ended up having to live in Siberia.
Right.
The six main defendants were shot. About 2,000 public figures in Leningrad, like bureaucrats, were removed from their positions and exiled from the city, losing all of their homes and their property.
Yeah.
It was supervised by Malenkov and Beria, carried out by Abakumov. Now, all of the accused were later rehabilitated under Khrushchev during the Khrushchev thaw, a lot of them posthumously.
I was going to say.
But Abakumov was actually arrested earlier than all of the Stalin. He was arrested in 1951 for not doing enough to fabricate a case against the Jews after the creation of Israel.
Oh, my God.
And he was put in jail. Stayed in there until Stalin died, and then he was executed for the Leningrad affair. So that was the head of Schmersh.
Yep. Take everything you just said that happened to those people in Leningrad and compare that to Tito sending roughly 12,000 people to Naked Island, who, as far as we know, there was evidence that they were conformists, not loyal to him, loyal to Stalin. So again, apples and oranges. Tito was trying to, and they've been doing this since the war, from the bottom up, build their party, build their country, build their government, and now they're trying to build their society. I think there's a lot to admire about Tito, certainly when you compare him to someone like Stalin.
It's what you asked for in Vegas, from the bottom up, you said. Give it to me from the bottom.
I'll take
up
a Stalin, please. Thank you. I don't know.
Until his death, on the 5th of March 1953, Stalin enforced the isolation of Yugoslavia throughout the communist world. And, you know, so the effects on Tito meant partly, or number one, it sort of ended his chances of getting his hands on Trieste, but he went hard after it anyway.
Yeah, he's got nothing to lose.
But as I said, he's surrounded by enemies.
Yeah.
He's surrounded by enemies in the east as well as the west. The army was now in a state of alert on all of Yugoslavia's frontiers. One place where the common form resolution to kick Yugoslavia out, though, was welcomed was in Italy, because the Italian Communist Party had lost an election in 1947, largely because it supported Yugoslavia's claim to Trieste.
Right.
And the Italian communists now became the most fervent anti-Titoists. But in Trieste, the Communist Party itself split along sort of ethnic lines. You had your Italian communists fighting your Slovene communists, even castrating Slovene communists when they caught them.
Damn.
Street battles going on.
Right.
And Stalin established an anti-Tito propaganda organization called Vidali, named after the boss of Trieste's Communist Party, Vittorio Vidali.
Nice name.
Now, did you happen to look up Vittorio Vidali?
No. Is he scary looking?
Yeah, a little bit, but scary being. Okay. More than scary looking.
Gotcha.
Fascinating character. He was expelled from Italy in 1922 after Mussolini came to power, went to the Soviet Union first, and then they sent him to Mexico.
Sure.
Where he became romantically involved with the photographer and communist activist Tina Modotti, who had previously had a relationship with Diego Rivera, the famous muralist, husband of Frida Kahlo. And at the time when Vidali got there, she was having a relationship with a Cuban communist leader, Julio Antonio Mella, who was also then in exile in Mexico.
Damn.
This is in the 20s, so, you know, way before Fidel Castro. He's an earlier Cuban communist during the Machado years. I think he'd been exiled by Machado. In fact, Vidali, Modotti, and Mella are all portrayed in Diego Rivera's 1928 mural about the Mexican Revolution called The Arsenal. But just after that was painted in early 1929, Mella, the Cuban, was accused of being a Trotskyist and was murdered while he was walking down the street arm in arm with Modotti. And many people think Vidali pulled the trigger, A, because he hated Trotskyists, and B, because he wanted to bone Modotti, which he then did.
Yeah.
Means and reminds me of Richard III, Act 1, Scene 2. Was ever woman in this humour wooed? Was ever woman in this humour won? I'll have her, but I will not keep her long. What? I, that killed her husband and his father, to take her in her heart's extremest hate, with curses in her mouth, tears in her eyes, the bleeding witness of her hatred by, having God, her conscience, and these bars against me, and I, nothing to back my suit at all, but the plain devil and the dissembling looks, and yet to win her, all the world to nothing, ha! Hath she forgot already that brave prince, Edward, her lord, whom I, some 3 months since, stabbed in my angry mood at Tewkesbury? A sweeter and lovelier gentleman framed in the prodigality of nature, young, valiant, wise, and no doubt right royal, the spacious world cannot again afford, and yet she will debase her eyes on me, the cropped, the golden prime of this sweet prince, and made her widow to a woeful bed, on me, who's all not equals Edward's moiety, on me that halt and am unshapen thus, my dukedom to a beggarly denier I do mistake my person all this while, upon my life she finds, although I cannot, myself to be a marvellous proper man. I'll be at charges for a looking-glass and entertain some score or two of tailors to study fashions to adorn my body. Since I am crept in favour with myself, will maintain it with some little cost. But first I'll turn yon fellow in his grave, and then return, lamenting to my love. Shine out, fair sun, till I have bought a glass that I may see my shadow as I pass. And scene. He's gonna fuck the wife of the guy he just shot in the head while she was standing next to him.
That's hot. I don't know if that's just me. I'm sorry, but pretty fucking hot. So from what you just said about the communist...
She hate-fucked him for the rest of her life. She
hate-fucked
him.
Oh, that's the best sex. Hate-fuck me. Yes.
Mm.
So now Tito has got even more enemies on his border because, like you said, the Italian communists are against him. The Dali is against him. So, fuck, I mean... Something's got to turn because he's just racking up the enemies at this point. So as you can imagine, between the tension between Stalin and Tito, the economic blockade of Yugoslavia by Stalin, things are getting pretty hard for the people. The collectivization, that's not going as well as it could. It's going better than it has in other places, but it's still the people are struggling. So as you can imagine, people are starting to flee the Balkans. They're going through Yugoslavia. They're going to places like Italy. Now, again, to to toot Tito's horn. The Titoists in his country and other countries are treating these, for lack of a better word, refugees, they're treating them pretty well. They don't have a lot to give, but they're not making them go back to their country. They're not putting them in jails. They're not killing them. From what we can tell, there's a lot of humane treatment of these people who just want a better life, you know, because they're dealing with poverty, forced collectivization, factory working conditions are shit. Now, again, and you have to kind of split hairs here, these people don't feel like they're living in terror like in Stalin's Russia. They just don't have a very good life. They don't have very good prospects, and they want to go somewhere where they can try to have a better chance at a better life. And for the most part, a lot of them do get to leave from where they're from. They're, you know, Tito's not putting a wall around Yugoslavia and saying you can't leave. Again, very humane person, but again, very practical matter. If you're going to take a bunch of refugees in, then you got to feed them. So maybe it's good to help them get through your country and get to Italy. But again, even if it's for selfish reasons, a very humane gesture on Tito's part, along with his party officials.
Yeah, the Yugoslavs treated anti-communists better than Stalin was treating his own people. I mean, foreign anti-communists exactly. were coming through the country.
Yes.
Some of them, particularly the Hungarians, had scars from torture that they endured in their own countries, but were treated much better in Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
They had, you know, they complained about poverty, collectivization in Yugoslavia, having to work in factories, how hard life was, but at least they weren't living in terror.
Yeah.
So it was clear that even as early as 1949, 1950, Yugoslavia was changing into a different sort of communist country under a system that became known as Titoism.
Right.
And I think that is where we will leave this episode, Ray.
Yeah, yeah.
Military buildup on the island of Cuba. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere.